Collectors, let's talk about the real villain in your collection. It's not Dr. Doom, it's the dreaded box stack. You know the one, piles of sagging boxes, and the issue you need is always in the bottom box. When you lift, you pray your spine survives. If your comic boxes are stacked like a game of Jenga, it's time for Drawer Boxes, the easy access storage solution from CollectionDrawer.com. Drawer Boxes are stackable up to 6 high, but you don't have to unstack anything to get inside. Just slide out the drawer and you're opening a treasure chest of comic glory. And just like any file cabinet drawer, they'll hang open on the own while you peruse your collection, thanks to their patented box locks box anchors that secure each unit so that they won't tip. Worried about a drawer slipping out and dumping that near mint run of Ultimate Spider-Man on the floor? Not a chance, but their patented locking tabs that keep drawers securely locked into their shell until you're ready to remove them. Let's talk box sort upright dividers. They keep your comics standing tall, sorted by title, issue, era, whatever you like, and make it easy to file. No more leaning stacks causing spine cracks. So ditch the lifting, ditch the chaos. Drawer boxes turn your collection into a library, not a workout. Visit CollectionDrawer.com and start enjoying your collection today. Doesn't your first Deadpool appearance deserve better than being buried in a cardboard coffin?
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. And this is a big one. There's some big books coming out, so let's not waste any
time. Titans of the industry coming at us hard in this September drop.
Here we go. It is back to school, and we're going to take you to class on this episode with Batman number one from DC Comics, written by Matt Fraction, art by Jorge Jimenez. This is, as you can tell from the title, a kickoff to a brand new volume of Batman. I believe this is the fourth time in the history of the title that it is rebooted, so not as frequent as some other titles, but we are actually following along on the plot that was left from Chip Zdarsky. This is very weirdly coming out the same time as Hush by Jim Lee and Jeff Loeb, which is not finished yet. So this does not pick up after that. This instead picks up a lot of the plot threads there, while still giving us done-in-one stories, as per Matt Fraction does in a lot of the issues he writes. And in fact, he's talked a little bit about how this is potentially, the way that he's referred to it is like what Hawkeye would have become if it had continued for a while. So that all out of the way, the one thing that is continuous, though, is Jorge Jimenez, who has actually been through several different iterations of Batman. He drew for Jamestown IV, Chip Zdarsky, and now Matt Fraction. And I want to start off by saying he is one of the most talented artists working today because he changes his style so drastically every time. It is incredibly impressive. This is a different Gotham City, different Batman, different look, different feel than we just had on Chip Zdarsky's take on the title. Just bowled over by what Jorge Jimenez can do.
Well, and I would argue it even scoops up a lot of just Batman art history. Like, I was seeing some of the, like, the Scott Snyder run from back in the day in this. Like, it just feels, there are familiar tones through all of this, and that's really nice across the board.
Yeah, I definitely agree that this art is incredible. Something that you said there just kind of blowing my mind. That's only the fourth time Batman's been that just seems not right at all. I feel like it happens four times a year. But I think this is an amazing team on this, and this is a very cool cover that we got here.
Anything in particular you want to say about the cover? what do you like about it specifically?
I like that Batman's on it.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Cool. Yeah, I was asking Pete. I was just curious if you had any specifics you wanted to throw out there.
I just think it's a great design. It makes you excited to read what's inside. So I think it accomplishes.
Is it the colors or like the layout of the way Batman is in front of the yellow circle? Like there's a yellow circle, blue wings.
the matching of the his symbol and what's going on. And then, you know, there's a lot of echoing there, which is cool.
A lot of times celebrities don't show up for their important like shoots and stuff. And it was really nice that Batman was here for this.
He's no Sidney Chandler. That's all I'll say.
Wow.
Oh, from the headlines. From your third grade class?
Yeah. Alex is still mad about a picture day incident that happened back then. I do have a question.
I don't want to get into it.
He does. He does, guys. Here's the thing he does. I want to ask, what do we think about this Batman? Because he seems simultaneously like up for stuff while being like sort of mean to people. Interesting. B, what do we think of hologram Alfred? Pete, I'm looking at you.
Well, I thought this was just he was just seeing Alfred because he misses Alfred. I didn't know that that was like a – I thought
it was – No, you think he was just having a vision.
Yeah.
No. This is a Alfred.
Really?
Yeah. No, it is. It's Alfred. It's a program of Alfred he's created.
Well, do you think that's fucked up?
That's kind of fucked up and sweet at the same time. Wow. That kind of really changes things for me. But I do think that this is exciting. I love the ending. I like it when Batman is smarter and kind of using his head more. So I feel like this could be very exciting. I just looked at it as like somebody who's going through mourning and just kind of projecting somebody to be there for him and helps him process. So I liked it from that aspect.
I really like this Batman. I actually, conversely to what you were saying, Justin, I think this is a less harsh Batman, which does follow off of what Chip was doing, where he's trying to be more open. He's trying to have a new lease on life. And that's what I got out of this. Like, he's not just running into every place and breaking everybody's backs and smashing everything he can see. He's trying to work with people and he's trying to work with the city and make it better. And that's cool. I like to see that.
I was just struck by how harsh he was early in the issue talking to someone. He was sort of like, and he's like getting pretty tired of this. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's just sort of like, he's like, I'm too old for this shit kind of
energy. Yeah, he's over it, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You seem not high on this is what I'm getting, Justin.
No, I liked it. I'm not saying, I was just trying to characterize the Batman we're getting here. And so getting into that. And then we get some sort of fun with these villain, the creeps, mm-hmm. who have a lot Creepies. Of scissors.
Yeah.
The creepers, yeah. So it's fun. I mean, I'm here. I'm here for it.
Yeah. I'll also throw out there, like, I liked him caring about the individual people in a city. Like, often we see these just epic clashes with Batman nowadays, and this, him saving somebody at a park, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty nice. I like to see that.
Yeah.
Also, we got a preview for KO in here that the dark side looked pretty intense in, so that was neat.
Interesting.
Huh.
Amazing Spider-Man number 11 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, Saladin Ahmed, Lee Gatlin, Jason Liu, art by John Romita Jr., Pepe Larraz, Pere Perez, Lee Gatlin, and Jason Liu. This is an oversized issue that is also renumbered as 975, but it's picking off of the big cliffhanger, and I should have said with the first one, but spoiler warning for the whole podcast. This is picking off of the cliffhanger where we found out that Spider-Man in New York City is not Spider-Man. Peter Parker in New York City is not Peter Parker. So we find out exactly what's going on in this issue, who they are, as well as where the real Spider-Man is. And then we get a couple of backup stories. I love this. I love that they are not wasting any time with these mysteries. Like, I kind of expected they would drag it out for a full six issues. I love just getting to it. The reveals feel absolutely makes sense throughout, and it's fun as well. Like, just I had a really good time reading this issue. It's just nice to be 11 issues in and still really enjoying a Spider-Man run, which it's been a couple of years.
Well, wow. But I feel like this is taking swings just from the jump. I feel like Joe Kelly's work has been like, oh, I'm doing a whole other thing here, and he's done a great job. Here's the difference, I think. I feel like Joe Kelly started from a distant place and then tethered it back to Spider-Man when so many runs lately. And I think it's a follow-up to Dan Slott's run, which was like so like in Peter Parker's head, in his trauma, in his life. And then it spread out from there. And it feels very refreshing to have this thing that feels like, yeah, he's in space. Yeah, we're incorporating some of the clone stuff in here. It's surprising, yet not pushing it too far while simultaneously being very creative. So I love it.
Yeah, I'm impressed with what Joe Kelly's doing here. This is fun. This is a great collection of stories here. I love all the different art styles, which is great. I love the kind of one-pager Spider-Man where he's talking about food and eating a sandwich. And the thing is there, so that was really awesome. Yeah, this is...
Pete, he was... The whole idea of that story was he was eating his webs. How'd you feel about that?
Well, I was... And then at the end, he eats his own web, and he's got two...
No, he starts there. He's tasting the sandwich, and he's like, you know, this is actually pretty good with the webs.
That's like eating your own boogers. That's like eating boogers.
Let's not... I mean, I don't know if it's that, you know what I mean? But, you know, but, yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I guess when Spidey's bored, he starts eating his own webbing. That's disturbing. But I just felt like the art style was fun, and it was just kind of a nice little... break in the action one pager, and it was fun to see kind of the thing rolling his eyes at him at the end there, so thought it was enjoyable.
How do we like the new suit?
I really like it. I like I talked about before with the whole Eight Deaths of Spider-Man thing, I've never really loved Spider-Man Gets in Mystical Stories, but it worked for me because it was fun and fresh and different and did dive deep into Spider-Man's head. I also am like, I don't know that if I need to see Spider-Man in space without any of his regular cast, but the costume is cool and fun and a different riff on the symbiote. We're getting some weird characters that he's mixing it up with. It's very like trapped far away in space, Star Trek Voyager style, trying to work his way home. Cool with me. I had a good time with that as well.
Yeah, and I like the riff on the Venom. Like, that's what I feel like Joe Kelly's done, is taken little pieces of this and tethered them back to the story he's telling, without it feeling too forced. And shouts to the term Miracle Thwip. I don't like Miracle Whip, but I like the pun Miracle Thwip.
Yeah.
Nice. Good.
Closer from Image Comics, written by Kira Gillen, art by Steve Lieber. This is a one-shot that I don't know if we want to spoil, but I also don't know how we could talk about it without spoiling it.
Yeah.
But yeah. I will say, love this team, love Kira Gillen's stuff, love Steve Lieber's stuff. I was surprised how much this book is basically just a goof. And
yes.
I was initially thrown by that because you expect like big, important storytelling from particularly Kieran Gillen. But I kind of love that they did that. Like, I think less, we don't need comics to be, this is the best, most important comic I've ever read in my entire life, every single time. Out of the gate, instead have something that is basically based on a joke, explores it a little bit emotionally, but is mostly there to have fun. I came out pretty happy with it.
This lost me a little bit, so I'm curious as what's the joke? Is the joke, you know, what if the mind box was real and there was a bunch of pigeons in there?
The mind box?
Mime? You know how the mimes get stuck in a box?
Mm.
All right, I'm going to ruin it because this is interesting.
I mean, do we have to at this point?
Yes. Pete, have you ever heard the song that goes, why do birds suddenly appear whenever you're near?
Yes.
Just yeah. Like me, they long to be close to you?
Yes, yeah. They so, talk about, you know, they counted the birds and then, you know.
So that's what's going on there, is birds just want to be close to her because, as we find out over the course of the issue, her now ex-boyfriend who proposed to her and she doesn't want to get married to cursed her or magicked her or sized her or something like that. She doesn't even care to live out the powers of this song.
Oh, wow.
Is that making it feel better?
Well, it makes more sense now. I just referenced the song and then got real weird and I was just like, I don't know what the fuck is happening anymore.
I do like that we've decided to break down books rather than like thumbs up or thumbs down. It's like, do you feel better or do you feel worse?
Hey, guys, that's the modern day. That's us. That's us reacting to.
All I know is you couldn't good? Pay me to go in a glass box with a bunch of pigeons and hang out there for a while. That's a nightmare.
Are you sure? Are you sure we couldn't pay you?
I bet we could pay you.
I bet we can come up with a number.
We're like two Mr. Beasts, Pete. We're going to pay you to sit in a box of birds.
No way.
You got double beasts.
Have you seen the Beast Bird Box on Netflix? That's what this is about. Is yes. Mr. Beast pays people
you
money.
You would have nightmares for your whole life if you did that. There's not enough money that you could pay me.
Sandra Bullock wins, though. It's pretty fun.
Well, great.
I feel like you, Alex. Like, this was a wild. Once I got the premise joke of it, I was like, "This is the whole book," and it was really funny and really like cool. Like, it was very. It was a great, a well sprung trap that got us when he was like, "You don't understand. There were 53 birds in there when you got out," and it was like, "That's a crazy idea." And then I feel like that's. I can almost see Kieran Gillen being excited about that. So that I felt all that energy there. And by the end, I was like, this is cool. I like that it found that emotional weight underneath it. But it's crazy. It was just such a surprising book to read, top to bottom, I guess.
Yeah. Adventures of Superman, Book of El, number one from DC Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Scott Godlewski. This is a much belated continuation of the story that they were telling on Superman. Was it in Superman or Action Comics? I feel like it was Action Comics. Anyway.
Yes, I believe it's Action Comics.
So there's some big mythic stuff going on here. This continues that plot line. It focuses on the adopted kids of Superman from War Worlds. War Worlds attacks Earth. Lots of things going down here, including a new villain or a new surprising villain from an old character. What'd you guys think about this?
JT says this was your pick of the week. What'd you think, bro?
It was a pick. I was, first off, I'll set it up and say I really like that they let Philip Kennedy Johnson do this to give him the time to bring his story to a close, because his story was, like a lot of Philip Kennedy Johnson's work, big, mythological, with a lot of elements that he sort of brought together in the DC universe or created whole cloth. So that's cool. And this, I thought, was good. He knew that we, the reader, have been away from this story for a while, so he let the characters be surprised and surprise each other with what was happening. So that was really nice, and I like the art feels very different from what's going on in the other Superman books, which I think is a smart choice. It also feels different from the earlier books, but I think it actually is nice that it's just sort of a new look to me.
Yeah, I agree. The art is really cool. Sets a great kind of unique tone for this. I felt like get a little Smallville fun in here, and then we got kind of like the attack and shit gets crazy. But I really love the pace, the action, the intrigue. I feel like they did such a good job of a first issue of like kind of setting this up for us, and I'm excited to see what's going to happen next.
What Pete last said is the thing that really struck me here. BKJ does some very dense storytelling all the time. The Warwick saga was very dense. But you can kind of get right in with this and understand what's going on. And that was very pleasantly surprising to me, that I thought this would be like, yeah, it's a first issue, but really it's kind of a 45th issue. And it is sort of that. But it resets the situation, resets the characters, has a bunch of mission statements in terms of what he thinks about all of them, and we're rocking and rolling in there. But so, yeah. Really great kickoff here. Imperial War, Exiles, number one, from Marvel, written by Steve Fox and Jonathan Hickman, art by Francesca Mana and David Tinto. This is another in a series of one-shots that are spinning off of the Cosmic Imperial, I was about to say crossover, but like mini-event is basically what it is. And this one is also spinning off of the X-Manhunt storyline, which found Professor X and Lilandra heading to space to rescue their daughter. We catch up with them here. And it's also leading into the upcoming Exiles series that's going to be spinning out of Imperial. That's a lot of stuff. How do you guys think this one held up?
Like you said, it's great to see Manhunt really pay off. I think they really knew how to bring this story to a close with this, you know?
Yeah, in a way that was understandable if you can tell multiple bird people apart.
And just so Professor X focused, just like Manhunt, really knew how to take a character we care about and really get us inside his head as he makes the next choice in his life, which is to have a daughter, sort of.
I don't know what's going on here. I mean, I do know what's going on here, but like, it's so dense with all the Shi'ar stuff, and they're just like nonstop walking in and out of places and taking baths and talking for full pages of dialogue. So
they're birds, Alex. They gotta bathe. They're, they're bird baths.
Oh yeah, and birds are always like.
They are making that noise.
Yeah. Wow. So that's a lot of the dialogue. It's not a lot of the dialogue. And to your point, like, there's no, Professor X and Lamandra come in, they take their daughter, and they're like, well, now sure, here she is. What should we do next? Exiles.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was a fun last panel, you know, the, to me, my exiles line, you know, and, you know, you got Lollipop Head, you know, we're kind of back in time with when this was happening, and like, we didn't get to see him kind of fly off to be the greatest dad we've ever seen here. So I don't know, man. I thought there were some nice moments. But overall, there was a lot to kind of get through to get to this. So I'm hoping we can kind of see this pay off and we get to see kind of Lollipop be a good dad. So we'll see.
What? You want to see him be a good dad?
Once. Maybe once him not be a piece of shit. I don't know.
Well, I do think that would be an interesting emotional thread to pull on if they had played with that at all in this issue, and maybe they'll play with it in the Exiles book. But this really feels like a point A to point B book, which makes it, in my mind, kind of not necessary. Like, if you want to know why Professor X, how he got his daughter back, the answer is pretty simply and easily. Like, there doesn't seem to be too many problems there. And when you get to that last page that Pete's talking about, which is fun, I'm like, cool. I want to see a scene with Professor X, Danger, Rocket Raccoon, Corsair, and what is that, like Kid Gladiator or something like that? I'm not honestly sure, but that sounds fun. Give me that. Don't be like, here's the coming attractions of something coming later. Give me that in this issue, because that seems like the fun thing.
Well, you got
to
get
to it. You know what I mean?
The two things I would say is, like, there are more, like, characters with little name tag lower thirds underneath them in this book than any other book on the stands this week. It's a crazy amount of people who are.
People
just like,
love
what?
Name tags, bro. So that's huge.
I literally do, but these characters don't do anything in this book besides stand in a big pose.
Here's what this book is. This book is the stretch of highway between two exits, and the last page is the signage where you're like, oh, cool, there's a Roy Rogers and a McDonald's at that rest stop. I'm going to head there next.
No. This book is like a reunion, a high school reunion where everybody's wearing tags, and you got to try to get yourself to the bar, but there's a lot of people you got to remember before that can happen.
And you're awkward because you're like, oh, no, I fucked Squirm. And I got to bump into them. And I don't know if Hussar, Oracle, Flashfire, Earthquake, and Warstar are going to be there.
You also fucked Squirm?
Oh, guys, I got news for you. We all fucked Squirm.
Comic Book Club Summer Vacation.
But more seriously, I do think. But seriously, folks, it is crazy to me that the Manhunt was built around the emotional pain that Professor X felt by hearing his daughter in peril. And we never get that story, really. We just get him being here with her amongst truly 50 people who are saying stuff. With DeKen and all of that other X-Men history that we don't really ever talk about anymore referenced. And then he's just like, she's starting a group called the Exiles that Professor X is going to be in?
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, great. Good branding, though, with Exiles.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Why don't we move on and talk about Maria Lovett's Artificial number one from Image Comics by Maria Lovett. As has become usual with her, she is coming up with a sci-fi premise, adding a little sexiness to it and pushing it forward here. Here, the idea, we're following a woman who hires an android, do we want to call it, for a date.
It's like an AI app.
AI app android called Date X. She goes on a date with it, really likes it. Her friends drunkenly convince her to put out the money and get it full time because it shuts down right before she has sex with it. Except she doesn't listen to some kind of important instructions when she is paying for it. So it's probably going to go horribly wrong as things go further. Justin, I know you and I have enjoyed Maria Lovett's stuff of the past. What did you think about this one?
You ever see a magician do a trick a bunch of times? You're like, I know how this trick goes. But then you're like, I still like it. I still like that trick. That's the way I feel about these Maria Lovett books, where I'm like, oh, is this another book about someone finding sexual satisfaction through a sci-fi, vaguely sci-fi premise? And that's what this is. But I will say, as soon as the faces get a little ruddy, I like it. I think of those moments.
They got the red stripes like the cover we're looking at right now.
Hell yeah. I like this. It's good. The scenes are good. I like the progression. This Maria Lovett's writing and art have a sexual charge to them that I think serves the stories in a way that doesn't feel exploitive, something that I know Pete has a problem with a lot. This actually feels germane to the topic, so I think it really works.
Yeah, I mean, the important part is that Maria loves it. You know what I mean? And I think that comes through, which is great. I really think, though, that the art is absolutely amazing. It's quite impressive artistically what this comic is doing.
I also thought this was funnier than her usual books. Like, yes, there's already always a little bit of a sense of humor, but this seems... it's going to turn into a thriller, like she has already said that, but it seems like a comedy at the beginning here, and that was a surprising tone as well. So I'm enjoying this. This is fun. It's probably going to go off the rails in crazy ways if we know anything from her previous work, but I'm excited to follow it.
Yeah.
Speaking of going off the rails in crazy ways, Skid Please
Alex,
2.
The Alex alarm's going off because he loves this.
Skid Please 2, number one from Oni Press, written by Jordan Thomas, art by Daniel Jeté. And I do love this. I mentioned this on the live show, but if you didn't read the first one, it takes place in a indeterminate future where people are cloned off of Skid. But those clones have a tendency to go crazy and kill people, or do they? That's what we explored over the first series, leading up to the revelation that the main comp we're following may in fact be a skin clone himself, or vice versa.
Twist.
The leader of the resistance may be his skin clone. I don't think we actually know for sure yet, though I may be forgetting, but we're picking up later and getting deeper into that here, and it continues to be gross and twisty, and it's really pushing on the characters while being very funny and arch at the same time. I do really like this book.
There's a moment in this book, a panel where... have you guys been served those ads for games on Instagram where it's like you stand and a character shoots a gun and it bounces off stuff? There's a panel of that in this, and I was like, I sort of was like, oh my God, that's that thing. it really got me in like a very dumb way of like something that I see a lot on my phone. But
Fun slice of life for sharing that. I appreciate it, man.
Well, they use it a couple times.
Are you thinking of Pull the Pin? It kind of looked like Pull the Pin. Is that what you're thinking of?
There's that. There's one like that. There's one with a gun that I get served a lot, and one with Pull the Pin. And there's most of what I get is a guy sliding back and forth between two, like, shuttles of people he shoots over and over again.
Yeah. My favorite of those fake ads, while we're talking about it, they definitely do this on TikTok, is they have a fake podcast where people are talking about the game. Have you ever seen that? Where it's four people in squares being like, oh my God, did you play this game yet? It's the best game. I'm like, yeah, no. Like, I love how you can upgrade. And at that point, I swipe away, but it's crazy.
Wow. Versus is that an AI? Where,
no,
AI
it's, people? A, real? It's real people. They hired to pretend to do a podcast talking about this game.
Well, anyway, holy Skin shit. Police number one, which is the
wait, sorry, music. Before you move on, if anybody wants to give us money to do that, we 100% will.
Yeah, exactly. To talk on a podcast for money, we're right there. We're so close.
I feel like Skin Police 2, number one, is a crazy fun issue. This continues to be awesome. I'm glad that we're reading more of this. You know, it's just one of those things where it's like, if you're going to give a big speech, don't set up in front of a giant lizard. You know, I feel like that's just a bad omen. And, you know, somebody's going to try to shoot somebody from the giant lizard eye. And I feel like, you know, they should have saw that coming. You know what I mean?
Great art, great exploding head. I like the way that Pete, you said that this continues to be good, because I agree with you. It continues to be skintense.
It's,
satisfying.
It is satisfying. I'm enjoying this, and I want more. It's very unique and cool.
Give me some skin, I say, and let's move on to Birds of Prey number 25 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Cliff Richards and Sammy Basri. Bunch of stuff going on in this issue, but the big thing is the birds are still trying to figure out how to go on the offensive against the group that's been attacking them. And that leads to some fun costume changes.
Yay!
And other things. Whoop, whoop. Period.
Yeah,
over you.
I love this. Bart is just so great in this comic, and this continues to be fantastic. Love the team. Can't wait for the next adventure. I mean, I really love the art. I sound like a broken record on this comic, but there's just such amazing pages and panel layouts and cool villain. The snake monster thing was very cool. So, yeah, this is in great hands and continues to kick ass.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this. This is like one of the most consistent books on the stands. It continues to be excellent and put while maintaining the great art and writing, still pushing out and bringing in these elements like the whole new looks for the group here. So really fun.
Yeah, cool cover.
Doctor Strange 450 from Marvel, written by J. Michael Straczynski. Man, you really snuck that in there so I couldn't rail on you about it. Written by J. Michael Straczynski, Ashley Allen, Roger Stern, Christian Ward, and Derek Landy. Art by Lee Ferguson, Ig Guara, Ron Lim, Christian Ward, and Ivan Fiorelli. This is a collection of stories honoring this anniversary for Doctor Strange, ending with a teaser of Derek Landy and Ivan Fiorelli. Ivan Ferreira's new series that's going to be coming pretty soon, which finds Doctor Strange in Asgard. Can I say something to you guys? I had a weird revelation while I was reading this issue.
Oh boy!
Which is, I don't like Doctor Strange.
What?
I don't know. I just don't care about him. I was reading this.
Are
I was
you
like,
serious?
The art is very good in here, pretty much across the board.
What about the last couple of movies? What are you talking about?
Literally the couple. No, it's fine. I'm just like, I don't know. I just don't care about you as a character. I'm not really.
Is
into
he too strange
for
some strange epic? Enough.
Runs of Doctor Strange.
Sure, absolutely. I'm not slagging those off at all. I'm just talking my personal preference. I realized reading this, I was like, I have no emotional attachment to any of this.
Wow.
The one that I did, Christian Ward's story, that's I thought strange. Was great.
Loved Christian Ward's story.
Totally nailed exactly the aesthetic that you want for a Doctor Strange story. And I thought also gave it some really good emotional grounding as well. So there we go.
I agree. I really like that. How would you feel, the JMS story that kicked off the issue, how would you feel if, like, your shirt was like, yeah, that was a person once? Your shirt was a person.
I think that was the thing. Like, there was nothing wrong with that story necessarily, but that sort of thing, I was like, I don't know. I'm just not into this, and I don't know why.
Well, here's my takeaway from this issue. Like, I love Doctor Strange. I think there's been some great runs. I've enjoyed the most recent run that ended. Perhaps the favorite was Ghost Dog.
There was Jason Aaron's run was great. Donny Cates' run following it was also really great. So, like, I'm not saying there have been all Doctor Strange comic books are bad. I'm just saying, like, there's something about I just can't get into caring about the character.
Well, but I think the issue, what I thought was there was some great stuff. There was great Clea stuff in these recent runs. Like, I think there has been some emotionality to it. I just think right now, Doctor Strange sort of stuck in Asgard feels like a sideshow. I think we need Doctor Strange to, my thought reading this was like, go on a Silver Surfer style emotional wandering and like find out some things, do some like done in one stuff and have Doctor Strange go on a real journey and get stranger, I think would be really cool. Like, it reminded me of it made me want the what was the Superman book where he was lost? It was Superman Lost.
Yes.
What was the one where he was lost? It was called Lost? Something like that. Doctor Strange.
What was the Star Trek series where there are Voyagers? What was that?
Great title. I mean, it's smart titling. Yeah. It happened in my brain.
Anyways, this is a celebration of Doctor Strange, which I'm all about. I feel like he is a fun character. And this is a great collection of stories. I liked all of them. I thought they were all kind of unique. Very enjoyable art. Also very touching Jim Shooter tribute that Marvel is running in its comics right now, which is great. So, I thought this was a nice package and a nice celebration of a fantastic character, Zalbin.
I'm just saying, if I die and become a cape, I want you guys to share me.
Sure.
Hey, man, I respect articles of clothing, so don't you worry about it.
You do? What articles do you respect the most?
I'm just saying. What do you mean by that? I respect shirts. I respect pants. You know what I mean?
You respect pants?
Yep.
What do you mean by that? Because you wear them?
Yeah, that's right.
You take care of them? Mm-hmm. Put them on hangers?
That's right.
You wash them on a gentle cycle? What do you mean you respect pants?
Delicate, baby. Come on, man. I respect it.
Respect the pants.
Respect pants.
Everything Dead and Dying, number one, from Image Comics, written by Tate Bromble, art by Jacob Phillips. There's a lot to discover in this book over the course of it, but basically it takes place in a zombie apocalypse. There is one man who is alive, and he's trying to hold on to what is left of his life. It's also, we should note, a different sort of zombie apocalypse where the zombies don't necessarily seem to eat people, just sort of go through the motions of their life. It's very sad. It is morose. It's beautifully drawn, as usual, by Jacob Phillips. I really like this issue, even though it took a little while to kind of figure out what was going on.
Well, I agree with you. It definitely, like, and where it ended up, I feel like, oh, okay, we're getting into some more classic zombie elements. But the entire book, I was like, oh, this feels so different. This feels like such a different way into a story like this. And it really got me in the way that it did that, by getting us into the emotionality, this sort of fractured POV of our main character. And then the fact that it's not a zombie story about running from the zombies, it's about the sadness of being around the zombies. So it's less about fear and more about melancholy and dealing with past emotions. And I thought that's a flavor we never see in zombie stories.
This cover here is haunting and beautiful at the same time. This is scary as fuck. When you see the little girl, the zombified, I was like, nope, and had to walk away. But the art is haunting and beautiful at the same time, which is impressive. It's an impressive combo.
Yep. The Adventures of Lumen N, number one, from Dark Horse Comics, written by James Robinson, art by Phil Hester. I think it actually is helpful to know where this is going at the end of the issue, but this is a very steampunk, magical-inspired book that jumps back in time to give us a tale of somebody that we eventually do find out is the grandson of Nemo, and that's kind of giving us...
Not the Disney fish.
No, not but the captain. Fashion. Yes, the captain.
Earlier and Disney fame.
It feels, Phil Hester's art here feels very Mike Mignola. It feels very BPRD. But also the inclusion of Nemo immediately made me think of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen as well. So there's a bit of that as well. But it's fun. I don't know. James Robinson's having a good time here. Phil Hester is great on art. I had a good time. Yes, Pete, what's your question?
Sorry, I just...
Pete's concerned. Pete has an emergency comment.
Yeah, if we could, if you could stop talking for like 5 seconds, that'd be great.
No problem.
This is JT Sizzle's boy here, okay? So I wanted to get a temp check. I want to check in with JT Sizz. How are you feeling before you read this? Were you nervous? Were you excited? Like, this is a great team.
You're talking
on
about
this.
James Robinson. Yes, that's right.
Writer of Starman, my favorite comic. Here's the thing, though, Pete. I actually think you have taken the mantle, the JR mantle, because you love his most recent book so much.
Yeah, the one about the magical hotel is just
Welcome to the Maynard.
Yeah. The Maynard, yeah.
Yeah, gotta you stop love the Maynards. That.
So I feel like you're the JR.
Sorry, did you just say Wolfman has Maynards?
No, you should shop at Maynards. Yeah, it's pretty big.
Wolfman has Maynards?
Do they only come out
spring
in May?
Balls? You mean spring balls?
Spring balls. Yes.
Wolfman has spring balls.
Spring balls.
Hey, Justin was
if
talking.
We're pull a quote, to... If we're going to pull a quote from this episode, I think it's Wolfman has spring balls.
That's the pull quote.
That'll be what we say to each other as a greeting from here on.
And sorry I did interrupt. I just had an emergency comment.
Great.
Yes. Just if we can all just lightly make the siren noise when we have it to make an emergency comment.
I
have comment.
One of those. I could do that.
Yeah,
please stop. Please stop.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
Here, please don't.
Look, Salmon in the morning on the drive time.
Emergency comment incoming. I'll keep that ready.
That's good. It's good to have a quick emergency comment that takes a full 20 seconds to set up sound-wise. I agree with you completely. This is so BPRD coded, top to bottom. And I think I talked about a book last week that was like a Hellboy alternative that will make you feel like you're reading classic Hellboy. I feel like if you're looking for some BPRD energy, this is where you want to be.
Yes.
Especially the preview for next issue feels like it's going to dive even deeper into sort of literary mythology and these new characters we're going to meet here. I wish the title was better. I feel like this is not a good title. The Adventures of Lumen N is
no. You don't say Lumen N. You just say Adventures of Lumen.
What about the N?
Yeah, this. You know, you only have to pronounce one N.
That's not how that works.
That's not how letters and words work.
Two N's right next to each other. You can,
there's a space between them.
Oh, so I should call you P. LePage?
Yep. That's how
got
that
works. It.
Huh, P. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
All right.
Well, we're learning a lot about each other.
Wait. I haven't talked about this book
you
yet.
You had to complain about this. Okay, go ahead.
Justin dodged my, how are you feeling about this? Because I thought maybe he would get excited.
I said you're the JR guy.
Dude, if one of my favorites was coming out with a book, I'd be hyped. I was excited, especially this cover. I feel like it does a good job of hyping you up. And I agree, this does feel like a BPRD in really great hands. So very excited about this. I feel like they did a great job of setting it up. But I was a little upset at the grandpa, you know what I mean? Which is weird for me because it's like, yo, grandpa, why are you killing all my neighbors just to make a fucking entrance, dude? That's a fucking rough way to introduce yourself. So, excited, but a little like, oh man, underwhelmed by the grandpa entrance. But, I'm excited to see what happens next.
Cool. Mm. Absolute Superman, number 11 from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Carmine DiGiandomenico. In the last issue, Kal-El was captured by Ra's al Ghul and Talia al Ghul. This issue, we're picking up with Brainiac experimenting on him, trying to break his will.
Oh,
Justin, I know you love this one, so take it away.
I talked about this a little bit on the live show, but the Absolute books, I feel like the sort of idea at the outset was like all your favorite heroes, but dark, twisted versions. And then we've gotten Batman, which is like definitely a little darker, but more about fun and big fights. Wonder Woman's about, oddly, hope and just inspiration. this book is like dark. It's just dragging us down to hell in so many ways, while also being much more like relevant to the real world and sort of having things to say about it. This reminded me of 1984 in a lot of ways, with the sort of like pushing a truth through very intense mindfuckery. The art is really cool and horrifying. This Superman is like lives in darkness and has the light that we have to find, which is like such a different flavor of Superman. So very cool, very interesting.
Yeah, I agree that this is very kind of intense. The Seuss being tortured by Brainiac was tough to kind of watch, but the art is great. It really does encapsulate the creepiness that and the intensity that Brainiac is kind of bringing into this. And then we get like this interesting kind of Red Hood preview in the back, which seems.
I thought this issue was great, and I actually kind of want to disagree a little bit, because I think this is very hopeful, and the thing that Jason Aaron has been doing throughout the series is dialing.
What part was the hopeful part? Was it all the torture? Was that the
hopeful
part?
So here's the crazy thing about sentences. When they're in the middle, there actually might be more beyond that.
Yeah, but sometimes people aren't patient enough to wait.
Sorry, did you want to make an emergency comment? I can just pull up. You let me know.
Yeah, this will be worth it. It'll be worth it. Oh, yeah, man. I love this bit.
You know what I mean? Go ahead, Pete. What was your emergency comment you wanted to say in the middle of my sentence?
I don't remember anymore.
I
my brain was wiped by a siren.
That's the best way to stop emergency comments, is to celebrate them, to announce them.
Yep. Anyway, as I was saying, one of the things that I found really hopeful about this book is the way that Jason Aaron has been dialing into the core ethos of Superman in every single issue. And that's exactly what we get here, as he beats Brainiac merely by not having his will broken, which I thought was rather wonderful and beautiful. It beats the villain with while he is lying there in stasis the entire time. The whole idea that he causes a Brainiac uprising by just whispering to them that there's a better way in the middle of the night, that is so core Superman, and that he is driving Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen to heights that they have never dreamed of, is wonderful as well. So it's challenging Superman, and it is grim and gross, but I am finding it really beautifully hopeful, because Superman is going to ultimately win the day.
He's just being nice.
We'll see.
Just being nice. We'll see.
He's just being nice, and the Brainiac is not doing so hot because he's just being too nice for him.
Exactly. That's Superman, man. Spider-Man 94, number one from Marvel, written by J.M. DeMatteis, art by Jim Toe. This is official continuation of the Spider-Man series from 1994. Pick it up on the big cliffhanger there that we kind of got a teaser of in the finale of X-Men 97. But here, Peter and Mary Jane are back together. They're fighting some new villains and old villains in New York City. I'll be fully honest, full disclosure here, I never watched this series, so I have no...
What?
What were you doing in 94, you piece of
shit? Yeah, what's up with you in 94?
I was fucking... No, I wasn't. I was...
Definitely. We know that's not true.
I don't know. Probably theater or something.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, I don't have an emotional connection to this, but I assume you guys do. Sorry, did you want an emergency comment in the middle there? Is that what was happening? Should I run?
No, I'll save my comment for my time.
Okay, all right, I'll save that for later then. Anyway, my point being, I was curious to hear from you guys, who I assume have an emotional connection to this, how you felt about this continuation.
Well, I was very excited because, you know, we're finally getting MJ and Peter together, although I was losing my mind when MJ asked, and then Peter was like, no. But then the second time he finally said yes, so I was screaming at my computer screen, which is fun. You know, if MJ asks you to get married, you say yes. But yeah, I thought this was fun. It was a great nostalgia bath. I feel like they did a great job of kind of really capturing the animation style of that time. So, gross villain reveal at the end there with those growing evil water babies, but MJ and Spider-Man together. That's all I need.
This is, of course, the Spider-Blood Spider-Man era that we're talking about here.
Right.
So, and if you didn't watch that show out there listening, and of course Alex here at home, that had one of the wildest continuities, just like X-Men 97, just like got into so much wild Spider-Man stuff, and which I think you see in this book. Like, did you expect to see Morlun thrown around in this?
I did not.
Yeah.
One of my least favorite characters. Very exciting.
Yeah, you hate Morlun, but
I don't. He's just a big Dracula dude. There's not much more going on there.
Well, but he eats spider totems.
Okay, great. So he's, he's a Dracula who eats spider totems.
Well, but then he has a family who also eats spider totems and other totems.
That's also pretty cool.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I hadn't really thought about it that way.
They travel all around the world and eat different totems, Alex.
Totems are delicious, Alex.
Rhinos, totems. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I eat crunchy totems every morning so I can get my fiber up.
That's good.
Smart. One of my, and thank you, your fiber is almost two up, let me say. Getting a little tight. It's getting a little tight down there. My favorite thing about Spider-Man is his totem, the fact that he's a totem.
And so you like this?
I did like this. Okay. It does, it's not afraid to dive into all of it, but it's still, I like J.M. DeMatteis as a writer. I think this stuff, especially for shouts to Pete, someone who likes to see Peter and Mary Jane together, this has got to be
like come on,
fresh dive into a cold lake.
Wrong.
Well, let me ask you a question, though. This is pure speculation, but a lot of people, after the success of X-Men 97, were pushing to have a Spider-Man 94. Do you think the fact that there is now a comic means that's never going to happen in animation?
Probably.
Yes.
Great.
I do think that.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about another ending that is back. Star Trek Voyager Homecoming, number one from IDW, written by Susan Bridges and Tilly Bridges, art by Angel Hernandez. This is taking place in a little pocket in the Star Trek Voyager finale, where they're not quite home yet, but they have returned to their quadrant, and they end up embroiled in yet another adventure, as you can imagine.
So you're saying it's a homecoming is what it is?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What?
Okay. I don't know.
That's not how you say that word.
Yeah, but there's a space between the N and the G, so you have to both pronounce both those. Anyway, I don't know what I'm saying. What do you guys think about this? Justin, you like Star Trek Voyager, right?
I like Star Trek, and this does I mean, Voyager is a series that I didn't watch all of. I know that's perhaps sacrilegious amongst the fans, but I really like all the characters in Voyager. And I think this issue does a great job of really letting us catch up with all of them, balancing them in a nice way, and giving us this little side quest, Flight of Fancy.
Yeah, I agree that it's feels like it's classic Star Trek fun here, where you got aliens on the ship, you got to figure it out, get to the bottom of it. So yeah, I thought fun Star Trek times and great art.
You're exhausted by aliens on the ship.
It's a classic, you know.
Man, all right. Anyway, Cheetah and Cheshire rob the Justice League number two from DC Comics, written by Greg Rucka, art by Nicola Scott. Cheetah and Cheshire have decided, you're not going to believe this, to rob the Justice League, but they got to put a crew together first. And so that's what this issue is all about, is figuring out who they want. They don't want any A-listers. They want people who are going to be off the radar. And so they put together a very weird crew to help them rob the Justice League Watchtower satellite. I continue to love this series. Greg Rucka and Nicola Scott just work perfectly together. Yeah. And like we talked about with the first issue, or at least I talked about with the first issue, there's this undercurrent of what is going on with Cheetah emotionally that I think gives what could be a sort of a goof book a lot of emotional grounding, and it's very nice. I'm excited to see where this goes.
Greg Rucka is just he really wants his characters to feel more than a lot of other writers, I feel like, and then just has a great command of dialogue to express that. And all of his dialogue is so refreshing, I feel like, and this book really nails that. And then Nicola Scott's stuff is just great. It has like a realism to it that I think it really matches Rucka's style. While still being super expressive, there's just some great pages in the middle here, with where Cheetah's talking to what's his name, the demon boy.
Oh, Clarion the Witch Boy.
Clarion, yeah. That are great. Like Clarion, the eyes just pop in so much of it. It's just really well done.
It's very funny you called that out, by the way, because that was the point of the book where I was like, who's that character? It's Clarion the Witch Boy in my head. And I was like, I don't know that I love that I know all of this.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's when you get hit with a real rush of information, it's a shame.
I mean, I was on board for the premise of this. I was like, okay, this seems like a fun idea. But a lot of this issue is just kind of them picking and sitting around and talking. So I'm looking forward to the execution of the idea. And I get it. We're building up to it. The first issue, they were like, this is going to be crazy. And now we're kind of settling into it. But just a lot of just chatting about what we're going to do, which is always a little tough.
It's a classic heist movie.
That's called making a plan.
Yeah, that's what they always do. They talk about the plan. They put the crew together. Then they put the heist together and figure out what they're going to do. That'll probably be next issue. And then they'll actually do the heist. They'll get there.
Don't worry. Like when you wake up, you're like, brush my teeth, eat some breakfast.
Is what point are you putting the crew together to do that? Because I get a crew for each of those stages.
Yeah, he needs crews, man.
Got the tooth crew. Yeah. Get the tooth crew in there.
By the way, I got to go soon because I got to talk to my explosives expert about brushing my teeth tonight. So.
Yeah. Wow. Heavy plaque guy, Alex.
He destroys plaque.
Yeah. He's a real plaque destroyer. Sisterhood, a Hyde Street story, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Mital Zuchut, art by Layla Lays. We are following a friend and her ghost, or vengeful ghost, man, who is forcing her to kill off the sorority that led to her death in more and more horrible ways. Pete, if I remember correctly, you were very worried about this book, the last issue. How are you feeling in issue 3?
I am still very worried. Here's the thing, guys. If you're going to make a pact with an evil demon that wants revenge, they're going to push you to start murdering people off. And you can't act surprised by it because you knew what you were signing up for. So, man, I'm really worried about this lady's life decisions that she's making right now because she's alive and her demon friend is already dead. So I feel like she's really putting herself in a tough position. And the kind of like way that the drowning demon ghost is just showing up in reflections is really creeping me the fuck out, man.
Yeah, there's when you're a ghost, it's hard to throw consequences on. There's not, like, that I know of. We've been talking about the afterlife a lot lately. There's not a lot of ghost jail or ghost handcuffs or whatever.
That you know of.
That's what I'm saying. I'm open. If I get thrown
in ghost
jail.
You're an open vessel is what you're saying to all ghosts listening right now. Like, if they're looking for a host, they're to come see you.
I would love to be a ghost host. I'm like Airbnb super ghost host. Like, I haven't had a lot of exposure to a haunting.
Wow. You really want to, you're looking to spice things up in your life.
And if you're looking for a ghost host, please check out our sponsor, Ghost Squarespace, the perfect place to host your ghost. Yeah. All right, I think the ad break is over. Why don't we move on and talk about All New Venom, number 10 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Carlos Gomez, continuing the event of the century as Paul and Mary Jane break up. Leading to a conversation between
Where's your
Mary
crowd
Jane
reaction
and-
noise now, you fucker? Come on. Let's put it in there, you know what I mean?
Was that it? Was that the crowd reaction?
No, not
noise,
the
really?
Racist one.
I don't think hearing a gong noise is racist, per se.
Yeah, I also don't think it is. I think it's kind of racist that you think it's racist, but it's not.
I
racist.
Just think there's something weird about doing
keep
it,
going. Keep going. Yeah. Anyway, then Mary Jane ends up in a conversation with Venom as well. There's a lot of conversations goes on this issue. Pete, you hate conversations, as we found out from Cheetah and Cheshire and Rob the Justice League. What do you think about this one?
And you hate it based on our conversations on all podcasts that we do.
That's correct. First off, fun cover. You know, it's like the reveal that MJ's inside Venom, but it's like done artistically, you know? So just want to say, you know, I appreciated the cover and what's going on that. It's a lot of nice layers to it.
Well, not to jump in with an emergency comment, but there is a great panel in the great page in the middle of the book that pays off this cover image. It's a three-part. I actually think that's useful. It's a three-part single panel where it's Mary Jane getting enveloped by the venom, and it's awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, it was cool. I'm glad you interrupted for that. Yeah, so I...
It's an emergency.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think that, you know, this is... it's a little weird with the... all the different kind of relationships going on because the
we got you with
just
that.
Should we stop? Do you need a minute?
No, the amount that threw you, it was just very.
You got you. I got you with that.
Yeah,
because anyway, you were talking about the cover, and I talked about a page that wasn't the cover, and I think it took a while for your brain to really understand that.
No, I remembered the page that you were talking about.
What do you think about this issue, Pete? Let's get this back on track.
All right, sorry. So anyways, yeah, I just think it was, it's a weird choice what's happening because it's like, man, I think Venom is a fun character, but what I don't want to see Venom doing is trying to have an emotional conversation with his son or their son, I should say. So it's weird to have like this very emotional conversation between a guardian and their like, tween, you know, son, but it's Venom. So there's a lot to kind of like go through there, but I'm like, man, I liked Venom comics when it was more stuff about action and stuff like that. So it's weird that kind of like having Venom go through this emotional crisis.
Well, let me just throw out there because I was thinking about this a lot actually while I was reading the issue because it is very different from the Venom that you're describing there, Pete. But this is the rare case where, like, two things I think are happening. One, they've actually allowed Venom to grow and change as a character, and that's what they're reckoning with in this issue.
Yeah,
with Mary Jane calling back and being like, why are you this way? Why are you here where you are here now? When I first encountered you, you threatened me. You took over my boyfriend. You threatened us. And now we are the same person. How do we deal with that? And I think that's actually kind of worthwhile. But there was another way that I was going to think about it, but I don't remember what it is. But
I think, because I agree with you, I really like that aspect of it because there is a lot of emotional tethers that it was just so much of this book up to this point was like, oh, it's crazy. Who is Venom? It could be anybody. And then this issue is like, no, it has to be Mary Jane because of these wild emotional connections to that Venom has for Eddie Brock, that Venom had for Peter Parker, that Mary Jane has for Peter. Then we have Paul in here with
don't
this,
bring
like,
up Paul.
Well, but it's a big part of the issue. It's a there's a
Paul's,
breakup.
Paul's not a big
here.
Part of anything. Don't fucking.
He,
up
I
that
hate
guy.
To tell you, Pete. He is a big part of this story. And then Venom's son is here, dealing with the emotional fallout of that. The fact that Venom, the symbiote, believes and rightly so that he is the father right alongside Eddie Brock, like. There's just so much emotional sort of pathways here. And on the side, we got Rick Jones just throwing another symbiote. I think this is one of Al Ewing's best books. And it's really, I think just, there's just a lot of threads coming together, both continuity-wise and emotional at the same time.
Well, let's see how it compares to another one of Al Ewing's books that I accidentally put back-to-back with this.
That's the Al Ewing block.
Ewing Block, Absolute Green Lantern, number 6 from DC Comics, written
Al
by
Squared.
Al Ewing, art by Janoia Lindsay. We're getting a ton of answers in this issue about what's been going on with the Green Lantern, the Black Hand, Abin Sur, everything else. Basically, not all of the mythology is revealed, but a lot of it is revealed in this issue. So, Justin, since you called All New Venom Al Ewing's best book, how do you feel about this one?
Yeah, Justin, you painted yourself in a corner there.
No, I mean, he can like both of them. That's fine.
Yeah, I've light spectrumed myself into the corner. I like a lot of the mythology that's built here, the ideas. It was a big exposition dump without giving us sort of what it means and what the repercussions are. So I feel like this is half of the information or half of the part of the story that we need. But it continues to have a lot of like big other set pieces, like when the giant Green Lantern symbol just shoots out black goo.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, dude. You're taking on my shit.
That's not trying to steal from you, P. LePage. The way that Mogo is coming as the threat, I think, is interesting. And I still don't quite know what the relationship here is between Joe and Hal from a power set perspective.
Yeah, first off, very cool cover. Yeah, I thought that the ending was fun. Badass panel of that kind of Green Lantern center pouring blood. And, you know, it's crazy to me that people think they can just smoke in office buildings. Like, where would you just come out of a fucking time cave? Like, what the hell happened to you? But great Huntress in here as well. There's a lot of interesting things happening in here. This one's a little murky, this issue, for me, but overall, I'm having a lot of fun with all the stuff happening.
This one, and I think it's partially because we get this reveal of John Stewart as a Yellow Lantern of sorts, laying out all the exposition. Gold Lantern, excuse me, reminded me a lot of Radiant Black and the recent Catalyst War crossover, because the Radiant Yellow was also like the I'm an all-knowing Time Lord who understands how everything fits together. So very similar in terms of that. Yep. But I really like this book a lot, and I get more and more interested in it every issue. I really like Junoi Lindsay's art, like I've said a million times. Feels very manga influenced to me, and I think that continues to come through. And the black goop was indeed gross and cool. Blood Honey from IDW by Sean Peacock. This is an oversized one-shot rom-com about two lovers, queen and king of the school, who are trying to kill each other. Pete, you love this one.
Yeah, I really love the art style. It's kind of like a twisted, dark Archie a little bit. It's like it's almost like they took an Archie comic and stretched it out, because there's like a lot of interesting sharp angles and kind of a darker kind of a look to it, which is really nice. I feel like
Archie meets Deadly Class is the what I was my
ooh headline. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I love the ending of this issue, and I feel like this is fun stuff. Two weird people kind of found each other, but are also kind of misinformed a little bit, but very passionate. So yeah, I like this idea. I think it's an interesting, kind of take on things that we've seen. So yeah, I like this.
I did like this too. A lot of my time reading this felt like I was thinking about the comparisons and the inspirations for this. I thought the art though really worked here in this. And there were some great moments where it really elevated toward a very theatrical couple scenes in it, and that I think those really worked for me when we got into. There's a great full splash page where the two main characters are talking to each other and sharing word balloons. There's some letters that go back and forth, and some great stabbings that I know.
Yeah, dude, you love a great stabbing.
I also love a great stabbing, but I also love Phantom Road number 15, or do I? I guess we'll find out. From Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Gabriel H. Walta. We are finishing off a big mythology arc here, taking Bias back in the day, where we find out more about the road, its origins, and what it means for today. Great art from Gabriel H. Walta.
Yeah.
I'm getting less enthused with the story. Like, I really like the first arc, but I feel like we spent maybe a little too much time back in the day, and I'm less interested in the answers than what it's doing to the characters and how this road is driving them forward. So that's just me.
I mean, I hear you. I feel like I really liked the backstory. I feel this arc specifically was really working for me. I just think they didn't quite tether it back to the main story at the end here well enough. So it didn't quite land for me, but I do enjoy it.
First off, cool cover. Love the twist at the end here. Yeah, I think it's interesting, this kind of dad reveal. So I'm kind of I'm on board. I've been enjoying Jeff Lemire's run with this Phantom Road. There's a lot of weird kind of creepy twists and turns here, which I really appreciate. But I really think Lemire is doing great stuff with this comic. I'm been impressed with the Phantom Road. So I'm enjoying this.
Uncanny X-Men, number 20 from Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by Luciano Vecchio. Bunch of stuff going on in this issue as usual, but the main event is Wolverine and one of the young characters in the Outliers team up and go on an adventure together. Yeah. Take it away, Pete.
I mean, yeah. That's just fun. Wolverine and a new guy going on an adventure. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I want to see. You know what I mean? Like, let's grab the young buck who loves a loose-fitting mask, and let's go on an adventure and learn some stuff about each other and life. And, yeah, thank you. That's what I like. Gail Simone is doing such a great job. The last panel was a little bit of the old get-off-my-lawn look, but other than that, I feel like this is fun stuff.
Gail Simone continues to give us the most classic X-Men type of storytelling that I feel like we grew up reading through the 90s and early aughts, and update it successfully, where we really get to be with the teachers and the students in different ways and follow them as they're all working together to solve the issues that are constantly being presented to them in very, sometimes un-X-Men ways. The fact that Gambit still can just teleport and stuff like that is wild. His dragon friend / enemy. And also, like, I was really excited to see that scene with Monet St. Croix and getting back into the Grey Malkin stuff. Have we talked about who we think the secret inmate X is?
Isn't it one of the bald mutants where the avians or whatever they are?
I don't know. That just hearing you say that doesn't make me excited. So,
I was conflicted about that scene because I did really like the stuff with Monet St. Croix. Yeah. And I thought everything she was saying about the prison was good, but we have not spent nearly enough time there to make it worth it. And it made me wish not to like backseat write these books or anything, but it made me wish that we had Grey Malkin Prison as more of a central antagonist, like we would back in the day where it was like Cameron Hodge for 50 issues or something like that with like slight side trips. Grey Malkin Prison is such a non-factor that when they cut back to it, I was like, oh, right, that exists. So I don't know. I know they've given it some focus, but it hasn't quite hit as hard as I would like it to.
I don't mind it. I feel like in the classic Chris Claremont style, stuff can sit boiling without being touched on. Because the arcs loop in what they're talking, they keep their narratives tight in this book anyway, but still give us these little scenes that serve as little anchors to other things that are happening. So I think it's working. I really like it.
Batgirl, number 11 from DC Comics, written by Tate Bromble, art by Takeshi Miyazawa. In this issue, Batgirl is still teaming up with Jade Tiger, her half-brother,
to
take down some warriors who are coming to fight them and maybe assist them. Pete, since you seem excited, take this one away.
Yeah, Alex, doesn't it seem like a cool cover to you? I feel like it does.
What I really like about it is that we get to see Batgirl in the foreground on a mountain looking at the clouded visage of a couple of different people. What is going on right now?
I don't know what you're doing.
I wasn't doing anything.
Seems like you were.
I don't think I was. Anyway, it's really beautiful done. There's a beautiful skyline there. We get the back of Batgirl in silhouette. And even the Batgirl logo is glowing like the sun or the moon above her. Gorgeous cover. Couldn't agree
Gorgeous
more.
Gorgeous cover. Yeah.
Gorgeous. Great. Great. And I'm sure that's the same sort of thing you would have said.
Yeah, I mean, if I felt like,
trying.
Explaining everything, you know what I mean?
Trying was your first word. I think that's right.
No, I wasn't going to say that. I just feel like, everybody has what they think is a good cover in their head. You know what I mean? If you're moved to say it's a cool cover, it's kind of personal.
100%. And I would just love to know more about it in a descriptive fashion.
No.
Like what you like about it.
Well, if you don't know what I like about it, I mean, that's kind of insane. Anyways, I feel like this is great. We're learning more about Batgirl. We're learning about this newly discovered family. And she's kind of forced to go on an adventure with them. So excited for that. Let's get more of that kind of cool stuff happening. Yeah, Batgirl has been great, continues to be great. It's in a great team's hands. So yes, more, please.
This doesn't exactly satisfy what I was saying about the Doctor Strange issue or Doctor Strange as a character earlier, but like Batgirl has just been able to go on a total separate thing away from Gotham. There's so little Bat in this, and but there is Girl. It's still really working, and I think the following her journey and the art that's showing it to us is really good. So that's what I want for D-Strange.
Let's continue our 11 block with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 11 from IDW, written by Jason Aaron, art by Juan Ferreira. We're getting towards the end here as the Turtles turn the tide on their trial. Yeah. Against the mayor of New York. And boy, I wish they'd come to the real New York. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, Pete, how are you feeling about this?
What are you trying to say? The Turtles live in the real New York, bro. All right?
That's why you left, right, Pete?
Well, why are they letting Mayor Adams stay in office? That's my question, then.
You would have to talk to the bigwigs in New York City about that. I mean, that's all...
When you say big
door deals, that's all
Rocksteady and Bebop, right?
Yeah.
It's and corrupt, of course,
it's a corrupt.
Mayor Adams' famous document, Shredder.
Oh, wow.
Pete, you've been pretty upset that the Turtles have been apart and fighting this issue. They're finally fighting together. How did that make you feel?
They're fighting in your favorite fashion, legally in court.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you feel good or feel bad?
I felt great. There's nothing better than a nice legal battle. Yeah, this is fun. Finally, they're starting to kind of come together. April has this moment where she's like, I've been talking to Splinter, and I'm just like, this Splinter thing is really freaking me out. I can't tell if this is just a dream or a nightmare or how are different people talking to Splinter. Splinter's dead, so I'm worried about that.
Has Splinter talked to you yet, Pete?
Oh, man, I can't wait. It's nice to see the team finally starting to work together here. So it's very excited, especially the way they kind of like break out of the courtroom there. So, I'm hopeful. It's been 11 issues of them fighting and things being really bad and sad and depressing. So hopefully this starts to turn things around, but, I'm not sure what's real or not anymore.
And you mean that in just separate reality, right?
Yeah. I just mean in my real life.
Yeah, now, it's crazy you didn't call out the cover here, Pete, because I think this cover is awesome. It's the turtles in the back of a cab. I thought
it
this
is
was
cool.
A fantastic cover, yeah.
It's a police
really
car,
fun.
Right?
It's what?
Yes.
Police car, not a cab.
Oh, police car, yeah.
Yeah. Same thing in your opinion, right?
Yeah, but they'll take you where you need to go. Either way.
They're both going the same place.
Yeah. They're easier to hail a cop car if you don't have the right stuff. you don't need an app, but the this issue. What do you think about April throwing on the old Casey Jones stuff?
A little homage to Casey Jones. I love it.
Well, she's taking revenge for him.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's all I want in life is someone to revenge me. You know what I mean?
It's I don't want to say it's weird necessarily, but I think like since they've spun Casey Jones into his own series, it actually would have made more sense to loop back to him heroically coming in at this point in the series.
Don't take it away from April.
Well, just because they set up him getting hurt earlier in the series, but he's off doing his own thing, as they refer to. I don't know. I think it's fun. It's a fun riff. Have April do it. Why not?
Yeah.
I want to know what's going on with this mayor, because there seemed to be some sort of hypnotizing thing going on, and we sort of blasted past that a little bit. I wonder if we're going to get any explanation at all.
Yeah, I don't know. This feels like a conclusive statement on some of that stuff, so I don't know if we're going to loop back to it.
JSA number 11, finishing our 11 block from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, 11. Art by Diego Olortegui. This is kicking off a two-part Ragnarok arc that is bringing to bear everything that's happened in the first year of JSA. We've skipped a couple of issues here, but I thought it was worth checking back in now that they're finishing up the first arc. What do we think about everything in JSA land?
I mean, I like this. It's crazy that Jeff Lemire's doing this on the heels of so much of Black Hammer, because I just feel so much of that. Mm-hmm. And it, like, it's not that it's he's ripping off his own work or anything, but like, it actually makes this work really great. And the art matches Jeff Lemire's stuff on Black Hammer. So, like, that's crazy. Like, Diego Alorta guy is really, really nice, very complimentary here. And I like the way we get some small scenes. We're jumping between so many wild ideas. A new Kid Eternity, all the Dr. Fate stuff that's happening here. Really beautiful moment with Green Lantern and Obsidian and Jade coming together. Yeah. Like, there's just so much happening here, and it all feels... It's hard to have these emotional moments still hit in such a compressed storytelling fashion.
Yeah, fun cover, crazy last panel reveal, fun relationship stuff. The villains reveal slash kind of page was just really great. Yeah, I mean, the tough part is that it leaves us at a tough spot where it's like, tune in next time. We're like, oh, goddamn, I can't wait to see what happens next. But yeah,
that's
looking
all
forward
comics,
to it.
Really, though.
Well, when you think about it, sure, yeah. But some leave you a little bit,
I love that this is looping back to the modern origin of the JSA, or at least how they ended up in the modern timeline. I think that's a really cool riff here that ties into the classic stuff that Justin is talking about. And in terms of the cover, it's great seeing the first of this two-part cover by Leonardo Romero that is showing all the villains on this side here facing off against the heroes, which is what we're going to see on the cover next month. So there you go. The Avengers, number 30 for Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Fareed Karami. The Avengers have discovered what is the missing moment, and it hides the Grail, which is Meridian, the thing that he's wanted since the beginning of this Avengers run. And they've discovered that it's taken place in Secret Wars, so they're going to head back there, which is what they do this issue. But first, before they can do that, there's a lot of business to take care of. For example... When they're leaving Earth, they got to leave their city, who is also their teammate, in the care of the X-Men, so the X-Men can save the world. So they can take care of that business, because otherwise the world would be unprotected. Meanwhile, the X-Men have clearly left Alaska unprotected, so I assume we'll find who took their place in Alaska in their issue. But
yeah, probably Alpha Flight or something,
yeah, or something like that. And then who's protecting Canada, honestly? Like, I guess we'll find out there. Anyway, it's a cascading who's protecting who.
Disaster. It's a cascading disaster.
It's a cascading disaster. And then I found this very helpful. After they set up the X-Men at the beginning of the issue and get that all out of the way, then they're in space and Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, is like, hey, guys, I just want to check. And this is a volunteer mission. And then they run down who everybody is. And he's like, they're like, I'm Black Panther. I'm from Wakanda. And I'm cool with this. And then after they check in with everybody, we really find out who all these characters are for the first time. We get a couple of pages of them just like breaking through a hole in space. So that was pretty cool as well. And it all ends in a reveal that I think we predicted 30 issues ago. So I loved it. What
I hear some criticisms in there.
Yeah, there's some mild criticisms.
Here's the thing. I feel like Jed McKay is a little bit being like, I don't really like what's happening in X-Men, so I'm just going to move the X-Men over here also and make this like the whole thing. Is that cool? Because we do invite the X-Men to the Impossible City, and then we check in with them later, and they're like, look at all this stuff we did. We solved an earthquake. And it's like, what is happening? You don't need to do this here. As far as the roll call moment, I actually thought it was cool. I liked it. It wasn't them saying, like, I'm Scarlet Witch and I'm here to dance or whatever. It was a little bit of, like, them saying, giving us a little character motivation for what happens. The only thing is we don't really get to see any of those motivations pay off.
No.
I wish we could have seen some of that here. That would have really made this feel like a tight, cohesive issue. And the reveal of Meridian is, yes, a bit underwhelming. it's the most obvious person, I guess, in the world, in the of all possible people it could have been.
Well, it also, I mean, not to keep lumping on this book, but it is frustrating to me to be like, we're returning to Secret Wars and the Marvel zombies are here and we get rid of them pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just, I don't know. What do you think, Pete? How are you feeling about this book?
Well, you know, the cover gives you that, the Return of the Marvel Zombies teaser. And so, you know, I'm like, well, how is this going to all work? And so then I was like, okay, well, you got to team up with the X-Men, X-Men and the Avengers versus Marvel Zombies. Okay, all right, maybe. But then the kind of, you know, I don't want to give it away if you guys didn't, the reveal at the end, I was like, man, that's not exciting. But this is a good jumping on point for the start of this if you wanted to get involved.
Wow. What a review.
Yeah. Anyway, Star Trek Red Shirts number 2 from IDW, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Megan Levins. Per the title, we are following a big group, a sort of black ops team of red shirts. We're all going to die one by one. It's kind of a Suicide Squad type thing. And sure enough, this issue, even more of them die in horrible ways. Justin, yeah. I think you really liked the first issue, if I remember. How'd you feel about this one?
I did. I mean, I think this is just a fun idea. I think the Star Trek line sort of closed out the Avengers style run with a bang. And then I felt like, oh, it's leaving it in a strange place to restart. We had a nice chat with, I want to say, the editor of the Star Trek line a couple months ago. They got me hyped about it for books like this, where it really is resetting and taking in a different direction, along with the Voyager book and the other books we've been talking about in recent weeks. So, like, I agree. I like this. It's a fun idea, and it is feels like a joke at first, but they actually play it out in a real way.
Yeah, I mean, and the cover is fun. It's a fun joke. But it is elevated to make it an interesting story, which is great. It's taking this kind of bit and then kind of really sitting in it a little bit, which I think is a cool idea.
We're also doing it. We're also seeing a red shirt get just slashed.
Yeah, just slashed. I mean, that's what's going to be the fun bit, their go-to. But, yeah, great art, great action. Yeah, I feel like they got epic monsters, and this is an enjoyable story. So I'm in on the joke and enjoying it.
Well, why don't we talk about more epic monsters with Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong 2, number 4 from DC Comics, written by Brian Buccellato, art by Christian Duce. The Justice League is over in the Monsterverse, and Lex Luthor and Lee Shaw are trying to create Titan-sized versions of the DC villains. Meanwhile, the heroes are trying to figure out how to stop them. In this issue, they do, by recreating the Titan formula that Lex Luthor has created, leading to a Titan-sized Superman fighting Godzilla. Pete, you had to be geeking out there, I bet.
Yeah, that's fun. You know, the primal soups is a good time.
Whose side were you on?
Godzilla. Always Godzilla's side. Always rolling
versus
with my
Superman
boy.
Even.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough place to be.
But what if it was like a primal Punisher versus Godzilla? How would you feel about that?
It's awful to say. It's awful to say.
What about a primal version of your childhood best friend just getting jacked up and going up?
Oh, man. Really? You talking about Chris Otter, bro?
Yeah, I'm talking about the Otter.
What about this? What about like Godzilla versus a primal version of Mary Jane and Spider-Man are married again?
Oh my God!
They accidentally invite Godzilla to the wedding, and he's like, "I'm going to ruin this."
That's a tough call.
I don't want to sit at my.
He loves an open bar. He loves
the Sandman.
Yeah, it was nice we got to see King Kong. We haven't been seeing him much, so it was nice we got a little moment with him.
Great. I have a question about this. Are you going to ask the same question, Justin?
Probably.
The question where they're like, they say something to King Kong about Green Lantern. They're like, oh, he doesn't know that yet. This is a different point in his timeline?
Yeah.
What?
Because we all know King Kong and Green Lantern roll deep, you know what I mean? So they gotta make sure that they're...
The implication is that, like, they're in the past of the MonsterVerse? Is that what's going on?
Do you know what's going on?
Me? No. That's the thing, is, like, I think, if anything, that's a cast-forward moment, I have to guess, that they're going to reveal later.
Okay. How would that work? He wouldn't know about Green Lantern because he forgot?
No, well, I think they're going to reveal why he said that later.
Okay. I don't understand what that means or why you would. I feel like there's something overcomplicated about this book that they're hiding because, like we talked about, they kept putting in 4 years after G-Day every three pages in previous issues. Thankfully, it wasn't here in this one, but like. Something is going on with this book that they haven't revealed what it is yet, I think.
Well, especially when the main thrust of the book is like, big Superman fight big monster.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, well,
which is that's fun, pretty though. Simple. I mean, that's fun, though.
I'm saying, let that be.
There's also, I will say, the craziest part of the issue to me, though, was the Flash, who has a massive head wound, being like, yeah, titanize me. And everybody's like, what are you, why are you like, doing no, that? Dude. Like,
you're
the Flash
alive.
Is very purposefully trying to die in the series.
It's
crazy. Anyway, I guess we're done talking about that. Gwenpool number 5 from Marvel, written by Kevin Scott, art by Stefano Nessi. This is the final issue of this series where all is revealed, kind of. And it turns out it's a story about stories, of course, per Gwenpool, and particularly how you gotta, like, really, people really remember and care about characters. So we've been a little back and forth about the series, or at least I've been certainly very critical of it. How did you guys feel about this conclusion?
Well, I feel like, you know, for what Gwenpool is, this is fun meta silliness, you know, and so if you're in on it, you know, that's what it is, and this is over the top. It's a little, you know, because they're kind of joking about how underwhelming the villain reveal is, so they're kind of all in on it, but it is pretty underwhelming, so other than that, I thought this was fine.
I mean, you talked about it in the last, in the Godzilla comic, about, like, getting a little too complicated, perhaps unnecessarily. And that's what I feel like this issue does. It's, we don't need to chase the rabbit that hard. This is, Gwenpool is a premise that is fun until you look at it too long, and I think that's what this issue does. And it over heightens the idea to me to the point of crushing it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think emotionally it hit. I will say, to spoil the big reveal, the villain behind everything, without saying his name, is Kevin Scott, who is trying to get his big chance to work on Gwenpool. And that's the reason, like, they bring back Gwen Stacy and turn her into an X weapon and all of these other things. And, like, I was actually okay with that reveal, but I think we took too long to get there. And like you're saying, Justin, there were too many things along the way. FML number 6 from Dark Horse Comics, yes. Written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, art by David Lopez. A lot of stuff going on this issue as well, but we are following Big Furry Guy and his dad, who have been, they're eventually locked up. While there are a bunch of murders going on in the town, meanwhile, the mom, who is very lightly Kelly Sue DeConnick, is going through some stuff herself. Pete, you love this one. Why did you love this one?
Yeah, I continue to love the story. Fun cover. It sets a great tone. I love the coloring, the style of this. It's bright. It's exciting. This continues to rock. Fun last page character reveal. Just really love the art and tone of this. This is just a solid book that's kind of unique and different and weird, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, I want to shout out the colors specifically are really great in this book, and Kelly Sue DeConnick's dialogue, and just moving between the tones of, like, a legitimate high-stakes murder accusation and the family sort of dealing with that, with some very regular person stuff for, one would assume, Kelly Sue's life. Happening at the same time. That is light and fun while also being dark and stakesy.
And last but not least, Poison Ivy, number 36 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Adigun Ilhan. The big thing that happened in the last issue is Poison Ivy is finally sort of a villain again, or at least leaning more towards villain. Meanwhile, Jenna from HR is just getting worse and worse thanks to some deals she made with some eternal bog creatures. What'd you guys think about this one? Justin, I know you've been saying most consistent book on the stands a couple of times this week, but take it away.
But this too, but I gotta say, Jenna from HR has been looking fucked up for a couple of years.
Yes.
And like, it's getting rough around the edges. So,
dude, I don't think she's doing too well, bro.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, one of the things that makes this title really work is the emotional, the like love triangle, but I guess it's sort of a quadrangle in a lot of ways here with Poison Ivy, Harley, who we rarely see in the comic, Janet from HR, and Flowerhead Guy. Mm-hmm. And
business Flowerhead Guy.
Yeah, we get a suit guy. We get into a little bit of that conversationally here, which I think is really, really cool and interesting, and the fact that they let all of it sort of hover over the story, which is also a big rebellious militia style story at the same time that what Poison Ivy's actually dealing with.
Great book. And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support the show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
And see us at P. LePage's house, because he's finally inviting us over.
Come on down.
You're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, and your machinery isn't working right. Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.